Thank you for sticking with us through bottom of the hour news break. It is Rosie on the House. We're talking trees with ISA certified arborist John Eisenhower of Save a Tree, joined by branch manager Gary Peterson. And there have been cold snaps just before Thanksgiving. Schools in Russia closed down because temperatures were below 58 degrees Fahrenheit. I know we're a lot farther south and closer to the equator, but you know, we get those cold snaps here sometimes. And what do we need to do to be prepared?
They're tough. They're tough on plants, no doubt about it. And Arizona has had we are a unique climate here with. We can be 17 degrees and we can be 117 degrees. Any place on the planet where you have a 100-degree swing, you know, throughout the course of the year is quite a wide margin of temperature, wide range of temperatures. And we do get those cold temperatures. We get these we have a lot of introduced plant species in many of our towns in Tucson and Phoenix. You know, we have a lot of desert plants, but yet we have a lot of introduced species that do quite well here, but they might do well at 25 degrees and above, or 28 degrees and above, or some, you know, 32 degrees and above. A lot of tropicals, a lot of plants from southern Mexico, Central America that end up being here, and they do great, you know, in our summer climate, in our spring climate, but man, you know, turn the corner into a cold winter, and they start getting a lot of sun, you know, a lot of frost damage. Many of them, like I'm thinking of our Tacomas, our yellow bells, and plants like that, we just expect them to get blasted every winter. They don't do much, do well under about 32 degrees. It doesn't take much to frost them and get them looking all browned out. But if they're established and they've been in the ground for a year or two, they bounce right back. You know, we just figure we're just going to cut them back in the spring. And sure enough, they just, you know, even if you have to cut them right to the ground, they'll bounce back. Other ones, you know, you have to be a little more protective of. If you have some of those higher dollar plants that you might need to throw a frost cloth over if you don't want them to get damaged too badly. And we do recommend getting that frost cloth early, so you don't end up finding an empty shelf. With the supply chain issues we've been having, that's something to probably consider. Make sure you get out and get that frost cloth to throw down. In a pinch, you can use a bed sheet, you know, or something heavier like that. But generally, as the temperatures rise in the morning after 10 or 11 o'clock, pull those off to get the solar energy back in there, get those, you know. But, you know, in the evenings as the temperatures start dropping and you're anticipating a frost, go ahead and cover the plants and get them ready for the evening.
Do you remember, was it 2008, when we had 4 days in Phoenix of below freezing temperatures? And all I remember was my poor ficus tree shed so many leaves because it just lost it. But I distinctly remember that because I was getting ready to run the Phoenix Half Marathon. I had guys from Chicago complaining how cold it was. It was 26 degrees that morning, and they were complaining. I said, "You're from Chicago. What are you complaining?"
Yeah,
but that was a cold, cold.
Yeah, there are some parts of town here, and there are some of our listeners who are nodding their heads in agreement that get down into those teens and mid-teens, 15, 16, 17 degrees. Those are some cold temps for Arizona. Thank goodness. And remember that the frost damage doesn't just occur because we get these cold spikes where these big drops in temperature. It's the extended time at those temperatures that cause the damage. It doesn't, if you drop down to 31 degrees for an hour or two and then you're back up to 32 or 33 the rest of the night, it's not going to do considerable damage. Then it is the multiple days of, you know, night after night after night of those, that will start to really take a toll on your citrus and your ficus trees. They'll start to really get hit hard. You can, you know, cause a little bit of humidity. You can create some humidity by watering your plants ahead of a frost that you've anticipated. Go ahead and flood irrigate underneath your plants. Get some water in the soil. That additional humidity can sometimes save your shrubs, especially your, you know, more delicate smaller plants, your flowers, ground cover, shrubs. Trees, it's a different story. You might put, you know, a little flood irrigation below those could cause a little bit of humidity, but generally you need to cover those trees. And remember, drape the shade cloth. Don't just drape it down to the ground. It needs to be on the ground and sealed so that you actually are trapping the moisture underneath the shade cloth that will create a little micro environment underneath the shade cloth. If you just drop your shade cloth down to near the soil or, you know, kind of apron it down to the soil surface, it'll just be basically the same temperature inside the shade cloth. You need to bring the shade cloth down, have at least a foot or so that you can have down on the soil, and then put some stones or something else around it to try to seal it off. Better yet, put some, you know, shovelfuls of decomposed granite around it so it's actually completely air-sealed at the bottom. That way, your whatever moisture there is inside that canopy is going to be just a degree or two warmer, and of course, the humidity is going to help as well.
And that's a really good point, because a lot of times you see people, they've had it blown off a few times, so they tie it around the trunk, and it's like you're not accomplishing anything if you're taking that frost cloth and tying it around the trunk.
Yeah, good point. That's exactly right. That's defeating the purpose. And yeah, you've got to have that. It's that air that's trapped in there that's slightly different than the outside air temperature. It also is protecting it from the wind, because the chill factor too is something to consider. Is when you get that wind blowing, as you know, in Ohio. Yep. It can be, you know, 30 degrees out, but the, you know, wind chill factor of, you know, it's down to 15 degrees. So
bone chilling.
Yeah. I remember I spent my first winter, you know, in northern Ohio, in Painesville, Ohio, right off the Lake Erie. And the wind coming off the lake, oh, my goodness. I was just a little desert rat, 19 years old, my first winter there. It was terrible.
You got to experience lake effect snow, too, I bet.
Yeah, that was a rough winter for this Arizona boy.
All right, so get ready for frost protection. And then for a lawn, obviously you can't cover the whole lawn. Do you just set your sprinklers to go off early morning? And
yeah, you need to be careful with that. And, you know, if you have frost on your lawn, you don't want to be walking on it. That's the main thing. You'll often have frost delays on golf courses for that very reason. They don't want you putting footprints, because what you're doing is when you step on those frozen blades of grass, you're crushing the cells, the actual cells in the leaf material, and you'll leave footprints across your grass or your golf green, and you don't want to do that. So wait until a little bit later in the morning when the thaw comes, and there's no frost, and then you can safely walk across it again. There are some suggestions with regard to the frost damage, preventing that frost damage in terms of watering. Look them up online. I don't want to give recommendations over the radio, but I think there are some suggestions for watering ahead of time again with your lawns. But you don't want to be setting up a condition where you have water that's freezing on the soil surface there. You want to encourage some humidity, but you don't want to be causing there to be a lake of water that's going to freeze as well and cause even more extensive damage. So just be careful with your lawns, especially walking across it on those frosty mornings.
And you wanted to talk today about removing trees.
Yeah, you know,
it kind of seems counterintuitive to your business.
Well, yeah, and people are always people are always asking us, well, you know, isn't it, can I always save my trees? Is there a time when I should, why would anyone ever want to remove a tree? And in Arizona, because we are so concerned about green canopy,
right,
and having good canopy cover in Arizona, we are very conscious about saving every tree we possibly can. And that's the name of our company, Save a Tree. So we are all about doing everything we can to preserve our trees in place. But there comes a time when the reason and the season for a tree expire, when that reason that the tree was originally planted, the tree's fulfilled its landscape purpose, and it's exceeded that purpose, and it maybe outgrown its landscape location. Maybe the tree has become unhealthy for various reasons. It's starting to decline. Maybe the tree has died. There's reasons why we have to eventually come in and say, you know, I think it's time for us to remove this tree. Some people have encroachment on their walls or their sidewalk or their driveway. They're starting to get some hardscape damage because the roots are getting underneath. And obviously a tree was beautiful for the first 15, 20 years of its life, but now it's become a not an asset but a liability. And when you get to that point, you just have to say, hey, it's time for us to remove this tree and replace it with something and enjoy seeing a smaller tree grow into that location. Sometimes you get so much shade and so much leaf litter that you realize, hey, my landscape would actually be improved by the removal of this tree, because now I can get more light to and some more sunlight to the understory plants. We can get some more visibility to the landscape beyond the tree. A lot of people have mountain views that are no longer there when they first moved in. And now, because trees have grown in and blocked. So there's a lot of sightline issues with removing trees. And for those various reasons, we have to come to the conclusion that some of these trees need to come out. The most important reason why we take trees out is because they become hazardous. Some trees have structural issues. They have excessive decay. Maybe they have overextended branches. Maybe they're lion-tailed trees that the distribution of the weight of the foliage in the trees is so bad that they're causing problems. Maybe some of those trees have a history of a branch failure, and month after month, year after year, you're worried. We have a lot of people who have beautiful landscapes and homes, and they've had branches, huge branches of some big trees, fall and cause some extensive damage. And so for those various reasons, we've had to, come in and take some of those trees out because they're posing such a high risk. We recommend, if you have some large trees, get a good professional opinion by an arborist and get a reputable company that's not going to be playing on your fears and having you take out trees unnecessarily. Be sure that there are good reasons for taking a tree out before you do. But once you've made that decision, you realize it's a good decision, then be sure you have a capable company who can come in and do it with competence and with safety and do a good job for you and make sure it's done well. And then you might be pleasantly surprised if you get a good arborist in there, that they'll come and say, hey, I think this tree should be saved. Don't take this tree out. We can mitigate the risk by simply doing some crown reduction or, even moving the targets beneath the tree, or maybe installing a cabling or bracing system that will give mechanical support to a structural defect so that now we can save that tree and give it another 10 or 15 years of life in the landscape without having to take it down.
Talking trees was save a tree. That's what we're trying to do, save that tree.
There you go.